Kyle, first thing first, how are you?
I'm well, thank you. I just got back a few days ago from a tour of Latin America, and it was a brutal tour, but the kids were great and the concerts were amazing. It was really a great time.
I've never been there, and I only have like AC/DC concert footage to go by, but is South America kind of where it's insane?
I can honestly say I can't remember the last time the audiences were that wild. They were great. They were just so into it, so happy, so kind and friendly. They were just really nice people, but they brought it, man. They are giving everyone a run for their money for being the best audiences. I can't say enough about how great it was.
Yeah, that's what I hear, and from what I've seen, it's totally right. Now, where I wanted to start was kind of there is some punk influence on the new record, and I wanted to go back to kind of your early days coming up in the punk scene. For somebody who wasn't around in America at that time, how would you describe that scene, and how did you kind of navigate that world?
It was amazing because I was a metal fan first when I was a kid, and my brother was the one that started really gravitating towards the punk, and he was trying to get me to enjoy it, and I resisted at first because like, no, I only like heavy metal, and then he tricked me, and he played some Corrosion of Conformity Animosity, the second album. And he told me it was a Metallica demo. And I was like, man, this is great. I've never heard it. And then he's like, you like it? And I'm like, yeah. And he goes, well, that means you like punk rock. And I went, what? And he told me, I was like, wow. But it opened my eyes. And then, you had bands like DRI, Charge GBH, Dead Kennedys, Raw Power, and just the door opened for me. And I just instantly went from looking at bands that I was listening to at the time. The new bands I was liking were Slayer, Metallica, Merciful Fate, Exodus. And I started seeing on their guitars Dead Kennedys stickers, Sex Pistols, and stuff. And I was like, well, if they like it, then it's okay for me to like it. And that's when crossover happened, as they call it. And it really was a fantastic thing, I think, because it was the same we everybody was saying the same thing, just in a different language, maybe. Kind of
Sure.
like hip hop, kind of like early rap, the gangster rap. It was just a different way of saying young people being angry and having something to
Sure.
say. And to me, that's the people part of it, I think, was what was special. When I was 15, I started going to see the punk rock shows, and I'd go see bands in small clubs, and I probably had no business being there. I was way too young to be there, but they let me in, and I enjoyed it. But when I saw DRI on the Dealing With It tour, summer of 1986, that was my first big punk show, and it was just like, wow, like this is home for me. And at the time, the heavy metal community in New Orleans was a lot more about hair metal,
Okay.
and they really didn't even want us to play on at their shows, much less come to the shows. But you started getting some of those people going, well, wait, what's going on over here? And eventually, as our band grew, the punk and the metal thing really kind of I'm not going to say we were the first ones to make that big in New Orleans, but we were one of the ones that helped it grow for sure.
Sure, and you mentioned something very interesting, I think, which is kind of the punk or rock ethos, and there's a lot of is made about it. But as you mentioned, the way I feel about it, it kind of goes beyond genre lines, and it's more of an attitude in general
Yes.
by young people, right? So at
Yes.
that time, what was it about? And as you started to become or make your first attempts at songwriting, how did you channel kind of some of that energy into the songs?
It, the punk rock attitude, as you mentioned, is definitely, I think, a lot more important than having a spiked mohawk or, a battle vest and combat boots. Like, that's all, that's all a way to show people this is who I am. But the free thought and the challenging of the system and refusing to accept everything that is handed to you is truly what it's all about. I think you're definitely onto something there. And that is something that, obviously it's going to connect with young people who are trying to find themselves. But to be able to maintain that throughout your life and career, I don't think you have to wear suspenders and boots and wear crazy hairdos to still maintain that mindset throughout life. And that's what I try to tell the audiences at our concerts now, is like, you don't even have to like punk rock or each other, but we all deserve to be in this room together and enjoy this show. And that's the unity part of punk rock, I think, that I still wave the flag for, is, we're all just one. Don't let them divide us.
But that's very interesting because obviously that is a sentiment that is reflected on the new album Defectum Omnium as well. So when you started writing for what would become this new album, how did those themes seep in? Is it just watching the world, watching the news?
Yeah, that's all you have to do is put the news on, and then you can write an entire album in one day. Yeah, basically, it was a combination of world news, day-to-day life. Everyone had to endure the pandemic. Throughout the pandemic, it shut everything down. There was isolation. The world was in a terrible state before that even happened. People are very desensitized to the needs and wants of others half the time. I just find that, not even just others, just the earth in general, people use it like it's a throwaway. And I really feel like, if we continue on this course, the earth is going to put us down just like it put down the dinosaurs, the saber-toothed tiger, the mastodon. Like, if we keep this up, it's over.
I always am reminded by, I'm a big comedy fan, and I'm always reminded by George Carlin, who used to say the earth would shake us off like a bad case of fleas.
Yeah, I have been saying that as well. In a lot of these interviews, is we're like fleas on the back of the earth. And like I mentioned to somebody that, and I didn't come up with this idea, but I kind of believe it. Like, COVID-19 is considered a virus. I don't consider COVID-19 the virus. I consider COVID-19 the Earth's cure to us, which is the virus. We are the virus.
But now we're getting in deep because that's in a way what defectum omnium means, right? That kind of we're all defected and we are the problem.
Yes, it translates in Latin, it translates to English as failure of all. And we are responsible for why the world is in such a terrible condition, and the earth has had enough of our bullshit.
Here's the with what we mentioned earlier about the kind of the punk mentality as well, but what do you think what role do you think music can play in all of this? And what role, because obviously we have the protest singers from the 60s, how do you see music as a vehicle to bring about some of that change, or as a or is that too contrived in a way?
Well, first of all, you've got to get people to have an attention span long enough to pay attention to what's being said. And don't get me wrong, I am not like on a crusade to try and fix things and change the world. Everything that we've written about on this album is strictly an observation and maybe a fantastical view of what could possibly happen. You know, I mean, we touch on a lot of t subjects. You know, there's division amongst people, you know, anarchy, rebellion, and hopelessness, despair. But that's not to say that I'm trying to incite a riot or anything. I
Sure.
just, to me, you know, it's just what I'm thinking one day, and what someone's interpretation of what I wrote, what I wrote about is less important than what it makes someone feel like, and how they take it. And the way I see it is, if anybody listens to anything that I've written and it gives them an idea to do something better for themselves or for humanity, well, then that's a good thing, you know. But it
Sure.
can, you know, that can work two ways, you know. That, I mean, look at the guy who, Richard Ramirez, the Night Stalker. He thought AC/DC was telling him to go do these killings, you know. It's
Sure,
like,
sure.
no.
That's the wrong frequency he was on, I think.
You know, but I mean, you can't blame AC/DC for that. It's not their fault.
No, definitely not. But I find that interesting. So, what does a kind of a typical day of working on the album look like then for the band? Because I read it was more communal, and I can imagine that the music also, in a way, inspires some of the lyrics.
Lyrics, to me, it always comes last. It's kind of the biggest pain in the ass when it comes to writing. I started as a musician, so I became a singer last, and that is something that I didn't always want, but you know, I kind of just had to accept the blessing that I was given and the responsibility that was bestowed upon me with it. But it is usually the last thing. Music comes first. Then I start with vocal melodies, and then I find words. So, you know, there is a process, I think, but it always starts with the music for me. So, whether it's a song that I initiated or one that Jason or Sasha might have initiated, what we like to do is we like to present it to each other and start building on it, and then as it grows, we each give each other input, and we take the best of what we have and we keep it. And the stuff that's not that great, we throw it away. And then we try to replace it with something that's better for the song. We're always trying to serve the song. The song is more important than any individual in the process of making that song. And that goes for production as well. I not everybody wants to be part of the production process. Not everybody understands how to, but for me, it's like the songwriting process and the production are the most important to me. And then after that, my job is to make sure that I've just given everything that I can to make sure that the quality of the takes are good.
Are you somewhat of a gearhead? Do you like to get kind of into
No.
it? Okay.
No, I'm just a guy that likes to plug it in and see how it sounds.
Fair enough. Well, I do find it interesting that you say you never considered yourself, or at least in the first place, a singer. But if you listen to some of the songs, especially The Tale of Unsound, I can't even read that. What is it? Moods?
Minds.
I can't even write my read my own handwriting. But the Tale of Unsound Minds, it's a little bit, you can hear your voice a little bit clearer, and you do have a really good voice, and when you get up there, it
Thank you.
almost like it sounds like a Led Zeppelin type thing. So
Thank you.
what is your approach to your vocals? And you mentioned trying to get the right take. So how do you get there?
When I was in high school, I joined the school chorus, and it was not an extracurricular activity. It was part of my daily
Okay.
curriculum. So I went to class every day and sang in class every day for 2 years of high school. And the reason I joined was just to get a little bit better, because I had just joined this band called Exhorter, and I just want to get a little better. And it turned out that, whoa, like I'm actually like kind of good at this. So I went to one semester of university in New Orleans here, and my final grade was singing Beethoven's Ninth Symphony with the New Orleans Symphony, two sold out concerts. And when I tell you that standing behind a symphony, a 60 something piece symphony with 30 other people singing, it's rocking. This I've yet to have a rock and roll experience that was as amazing as that. And it changed me, not just as a singer, but as a musician. And it took me a little while to take rock and that choral singing and put them together. But when I did, it just changed the game for everything. So, moving forward, I try not to, especially for Exhorter, I sing a lot differently in Exhorter than I do most of my other bands. A lot more aggressive, a lot more gruff, growly singing. But I was actually starting to bring the choral stuff in from the beginning on Slaughter in the Vatican. The intro to Slaughter in the Vatican, through him, with him, that was me. I did that when I was 17 years old. And on the Law, Cadence of the Dirge, there's a lot of vocal harmony on there. Some people are coming to me now going, why are you singing like that all of a sudden? It's not new. I've just gotten better at it. And for me, we could sit around and rewrite the same album over and over again, and it would be boring as could be. And people are either going to complain that you've changed, or they're going to complain that you're staying the same. So I don't know.
The way I see it, you can't please everybody. And from what I hear
No.
from talking to a lot of artists, basically, as long as it resonates with yourself, then it will resonate with some other people. So.
I mean, we believe in this album, and when we set out to do this album, our goal was to first make an album that we love and believe in. And along the way, we didn't want to just set everything on autopilot and have just one long song throughout the album. We wanted a whole lot of this, like the old Black Sabbath, Beatles, Led Zeppelin albums, that, peaks and valleys, different sounding songs, not the same thing over and over again. And I don't know, I've gotten a lot more favorable response from people about this album that we've just done than people complaining about it. There's always going to be people that, why isn't it like Slaughter in the Vatican? Well, because I was 16, 17 years old when we wrote it. I'm 54 now. But I don't know. It just seems like it's really resonating with people. And I think it's because everything that we wrote about on this album is stuff that people just went through themselves, and they go, I
Sure.
know what they're talking about.
Yeah. No, definitely. I wrote from Under the Gaslight, locked inside you're stuck, kept on ice. I mean, that must have been a COVID
Yeah, that's,
line.
a lot. COVID had a lot to do with a lot of input in this album. For instance, The Tale of Unsound Minds is mostly about being isolated and the mental suffering that one might go through being isolated, where they crave being around other people, but then when other people are around, you don't know how to deal with it, and you want them to be away. So it's kind of a double-edged sword, as they say.
I don't know if this is a good question, but you mentioned the earlier albums, and if you think about it now, are you surprised that Exhorter still exists?
I'm surprised that nobody, well, I can't even say nobody died along the way. We did lose somebody along the way. Frankie, we lost Frankie along the way. But at least nobody, we didn't kill each other. And this is a band that over the years, the biggest problem came from the inside with this band. We had a lot of inner conflict. There were multiple breakups. I mean, maybe four or five breakups along the way. It's just been really hard for this band to meet the potential that it has. So with the lineup we have right now, I'm not surprised, because with the guys that we have now, myself, Jason, and Sasha, and now Pat, we all get along really, really well. That there's never been this much peace in this band. And that goes a long way, and it allows us to really focus on the job and getting the job done, instead of, having disagreements about business things or personal things. And it's unfortunate because this band has never been short on talent and skill set, but man, it's just really tough when you can't go much longer than a handful of weeks before somebody's got a problem with somebody. It's tough, you know.
And is it like they say, it's like a marriage, right? You have so many people, so many egos to contend with. It is really. I'm surprised that some bands even managed to do it for a year or something, because it sounds so tricky.
You'll notice that the bands that go the longest without lineup changes are usually three pieces. ZZ Top, Rush, fewer people, fewer problems.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Last thing I want to talk about is you mentioned Pat and joining the band, and obviously from listening to the album and listening to the solos and the guitar work, I can hear his contribution. But from your perspective, having him around and having somebody of his caliber play on the record, how has that been?
His presence makes us a better band. His presence makes me a better guitar player. He's been very, very encouraging towards me of what I'm doing and the fact that I'm doing it and singing at the same time. That's what he keeps saying. He's like, I don't know how you're doing both. I just don't. But he's obviously a way more skilled guitar player than I am, and I'm fine with that. Man, he came in and his solos are just so good on this album. It's just amazing. But what he brings more than talent and ability, he just brings another good mind and spirit to add to the equation here. When we tour together and it's just the four of us in a van, long drives, long days, and somebody gets frustrated and kind of snaps. Well, the rest of us don't. You know how sometimes when a dog starts barking, all the other dogs, rah, 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 rah. It's not like that. Like when one person has a struggle, the rest of us work together to take that person back down to earth and calm things down. And I think that's really been instrumental in us having a very peaceful environment with our touring dynamics, and we respect each other, and that goes a long way.
What do you attribute that? Is it dependent on the group of people? Is it just getting older and being a little bit less in your own mind? What do you attribute it to, the fact that it's
I think
getting easier?
it's more of a people thing
Okay.
because I know plenty musicians my age that are fantastic musicians but have a difficult time getting along with others and working well with others. So to me, it's absolutely critical to find a group of people. Be it guys, girls, whoever, I don't care, whoever's getting the
Yeah.
job done, a group of people together that are not toxic towards each other.
And I'm very glad that you found those people, and hopefully there'll be plenty more Exhorter albums in the future.
Yeah,
Kyle, may I
we're just getting started.
may Kyle, may I thank you so much for taking the time to talk with me.
Thank you, Robin. I appreciate it.